our scars and our suffering. From Trayvon Martin to Michael Brown to Alton Sterling and far too many others, the shootings of young black men must stop.
Reverend Jesse Jackson from the DNC podium today talking about the Black Lives Matter issue. Once again, taking headlines at the DNC in Philadelphia. And, of course, that is what we are talking about, as we have been all week, the DNC in Philadelphia. My guests are Drew Elands, political commentator, and Lisa Crooms, law professor and associate dean of academic affairs at Howard University. And, of course, our own WHUR news reporter, Taylor Thomas, joins us with guests. I want to go back to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Mo, calling from Alexandria. Mo, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was going to say, we can't ignore the elephant in the room. We would have been happy to get something rather than nothing. Though I admire her passion, the prosecutor, she overcharged these guys. I mean, if anything, negligence would have been good, reckless endangerment, but second-degree murder, I mean, all of these other heavy charges, I mean, it was a black judge, black officers. I mean, that doesn't mean... That means something, because trust me, if everybody was white, including the judge, we would be even more upset than we are now.
Okay, Mo, thank you so much. Lisa, did she overcharge, in your opinion?
I'm not going to second guess her.
Mm.
Let truth be told, I can't walk in her shoes. I don't know what evidence that she was considering when bringing the charges. So at this point, it's Monday morning quarterbacking.
Yes. And, you know, I was just thinking, having that, I think what happened is the police officers and their lawyers saw how to game the system, and understanding that the bench trial was the key. And I think the bench trial made it somewhat, and I am not an attorney, but my observation is that once they saw the bench trial, and especially the jury trial that was hung jury, and then they saw the bench trial, they were like, this is the avenue, because they had that option. This is the avenue in which we can go. But I think it's interesting, like you said, when state's attorney talked about the difficulty of getting what she actually needed for this. Mm-hmm. But I don't even know, even if we had a special prosecutor, even if that will be helpful because of the structure and the system that's already in place, although I do advocate to have that independence there, but it also will make her job more difficult moving forward on any other cases that she may need the help of the police.
Let me go back to Philadelphia and the DNC with Taylor Thomas. Taylor, you have another guest to share with us.
Yes, you do, Harold. Former Maryland congressman and former head of the NAACP, Dr. Kwasi Nkrumah, thank you so much. In fact, you've been here the whole time. Just
thanks,
back listening.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about the Clinton administration. If she was to become president of the United States, do you believe we'll have the support, meaning African Americans will have the support to deal with issues like the Black Lives Movement?
I think the Democratic Party is so dependent on its largest and most supportive base, which are African American voters, that it would be hard-pressed to imagine, after what we've gone through in this campaign, for Hillary Clinton to be elected and then to renege on those promises or not do enough to help bring into existence a different kind of agenda that's not all black, but it's certainly all fair. And when it's all fair, we're included. So I don't think that they would risk that, because once you lose your base, it's gone. It takes a long time to get back. My belief is that Hillary will deliver on those things.
Let me, Taylor, if I may ask Kwasi Nkrumah a question. Taylor, can you hear me? Taylor, can you hear me?
It's getting harder. I'm sorry, Harold.
That's quite all right. I understand that you are in the media center. I do want to ask Kwasi Nkrumah a question about the political implications of today's issue and the broader political implications for the Democrats, because they've been talking about it. The Republicans have not.
Harold, hi. It's good to hear you.
Good to hear you.
Good to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
As you heard, it is kind of crazy in here. I heard the last part of your question, if you would be so kind as to repeat the first part. You were talking about political implications.
Right, of the Black Lives Matter movement and what has happened today and what impact it would have on the Democrats.
Well, I think it's already had an impact on the Democratic Party. The question becomes how real that is. Does it last another 100 days until the election and then dissipate? Or does it go beyond in recognition of the fact that the young men and young women all across this country who have come together and coalesced from the bottom up around this issue of Black Lives Matter. It's an important issue. You know, someone grabbed me today from one of the more conservative news outlets and said, well, what about Blue Lives Matter and what about Hispanic Lives Matter? And I said, look, you know, all lives matter. Black lives matter. They just haven't always mattered. And their issue was that, well, we don't hear enough about the other things that are going on. And I said, if you were at a breast cancer rally, you would be there because you support efforts to do away with breast cancer, and that would be your focus. But you wouldn't expect people who are suffering from lung cancer and their organization to say, hey, why didn't you talk about us or what's going on or some other kind of cancer? The focus is on what it's on simply because it's extremely important to highlight it. It doesn't diminish anything else in our society. But these young people cannot be denied. The issue can't be denied. It does not mean that Black Lives Matter part-time, sometime, or half the time. It means all the time, both in terms of the police and both in terms of what we are doing to ourselves in Black communities all over this country.
Okay. Drew, can she, Hillary Clinton, shake anti-police sentiment? You know, because she's been supporting Black Lives Matter. She's been very vocal about it, had a great big video about it the other day. Mm-hmm. But does she also need to provide some kind of balance?
Mm-hmm. We talked about that last night about, I think it was Dave Axelrod that said it would have been good or prudent to have someone else or to have, talk about, you know, having the widows or the mothers of the police officers out there. And, you know, I struggle with that because I know where I am on this issue, and while she has been very clear that she does not support or condone the targeting of police officers, right?
But also Michelle Obama, the first lady, had a really big applause line when she talked about the protesters in Dallas and the police in Dallas, both of them concerned about protecting our community.
Yes, and I think she does that. I've heard her talk about both issues in that way, but I already know from the right she's going to get hung up on this anyway, right? So what we have to do is make sure that her message, or she has to do, is make sure that her message is really clear and really firm, because ultimately, if we are concerned, right, the police officers are concerned about being targeted. However, if they're concerned about being targeted, we also need to come together, i.e. the FOP need to recognize that we've got to do something about accountability for those bad actors. And if we don't start doing something about those bad actors, again, it's going to swell. We know more now because of how we are all connected through social media. This is nothing new. We just know more now. And because we know more now, more people are like, look, enough is enough.
Lisa.
Well, I think that the other thing that I've been waiting for is an apology.
Like, from?
The Clintons together, because we can't lose sight of the fact that with the omnibus crime bill, with welfare reform, with the language of super predator and all of that narrative, that has laid the foundation for some of this. So to the extent that we're talking about accountability, all I'm saying is to recognize that much of what we're dealing with actually was put in place during the Clinton administration and might not have been possible had it not been a Democrat at the helm at that point.
I think there's a couple of things. If that's the case, we also need an apology from CBC. We need an apology from all of the legislators. But they've already apologized for that. But you have to put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. What was happening in the 1990s, crime was elevated, especially in these major cities, and they were trying to figure out what do we do. And hindsight is 2020 and all of that. But again, police brutality has absolutely nothing to do. For me, criminal justice reform and police reform are two separate issues. And while they need to, they have apologized as far as I'm concerned, but while they may need to deal with that and reconcile with that, we still need to deal with what is happening here to mm-hmm. Black and brown people a lot and some other folks. Excessive force is wrong. And people need to be held accountable, and they need to change their practices on de-escalation and how to handle it, period.
And Harold, yes. What Marilyn Mosby did is a prime example of trying to establish a new standard. You know, she's catching hell from some people today because she's decided that she can't win the other remaining cases because the judge who would end up trying those cases has already pretty much said, he doesn't see where there's substantial evidence.
And the evidence is pretty much the same every trial.
Well, yeah, and the bigger issue here is whether or not, if you are a police officer, can you with impunity go out and do what you want to do in an arrest and expect that you will never be charged? So what Marilyn Mosby has done is set a standard that, look, never before in Baltimore has any police officer brought to charges like this. If it happens, we will charge you so that you will know what defendants are like when they've got to hire a lawyer, when they've got to stand trial, and when they have to prove their innocence. And someone asked earlier, did she overcharge? Well, in these cases, you tend to overcharge because you recognize if the person is innocent, innocence will win out. And that those things that are where the overcharges will go away, but the things like reckless endangerment and other things like that give you an ability to at least win something. So I think more than anything, we have, at least in Baltimore, and I've been there all of my life, a situation where we were under National Guard control. There was a curfew dusk to dawn. Police cars were being smashed. People were in the street. Shots were being fired. It was totally out of control in terms of the uprising because people were mad. And it was important on that day when Marilyn came forward and brought the charges, not so much just to question whether or not you're overcharging or undercharging, because if that's the case, a jury or a judge in this instance will say not guilty, but to find a way to stem what was going on right before it exploded. And, the rest is history.
Hold on, Taylor. I need to go back to the phone lines real quick. Shanita, calling from Southeast. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you all so much for your time and definitely speaking with the dean from my wonderful alma mater, Howard University. And I mentioned briefly, even in other professions, specifically regarding this Freddie Gray trial, healthcare workers restrain patients who may be under the certain substance or influence, or even if they've committed a crime and came in with police custody. If a patient actually dies in the care of someone else when they have no ability to care for themselves, that person is liable. And I'm glad you all mentioned something, the word accountability, that keeps being mentioned. And on that notion, I just want to say the charges, as politically as that may sound correct, you know, this is setting the standard and those measures. If nothing comes out accountable out of this, and if Black Lives Matter does not turn into police sensitivity training, to not profile, as they call it, or see my nephew who is straight A's on the street corner and profile him a gangster or this terrible criminal and treat him like his life doesn't matter when he's in police custody, then nothing is ever going to come out of this.
Okay, Shanita, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Wallow, calling from Prince George's County. Wallow, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, it's Nalo. How you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Great. I just wanted to speak about the fact that a lot of times we go through not understanding that the police themselves are not being held accountable. And because they're not being held accountable, these things are being repeated again and again. Now, we know all officers are bad, all politicians are not bad, so on and so forth. But it's the accountability thing, just as your guest, I believe it was speaking to someone, and they was talking about the Clinton. And the thing is, it's not that we want to hold the Clintons in this dismayed-like manner, but apologize for you know what you did wrong, and you know that in that earned time, who was going to be the people that really got hurt from those bills being passed.
Okay. Mallow, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I need to take a break shortly, but before we go to break, I need to just kind of set up, what's coming up next. President Obama speaking tonight. Some have said this could be the biggest speech of his political career. But, often as it relates to President Obama, every big speech is the biggest speech. We're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jason from Northwest, you're next after the break. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our coverage of the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is day three. Back to the phone lines. Jason, calling from Northwest. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind, Jason?
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Fisher and your guests. Question that I have regarding the decision today on the Freddie Gray case, where the charges were dropped on all of the officers involved. And for that was before lack of evidence. What? How could they have say that the evidence that was what they call circumstantial evidence? Why was not that being used? Could they have used that as a form of evidence to, you know, prosecute the case?
I'll let Lisa try to tackle that.
Okay.
Jason, they did rely upon circumstantial evidence. The circumstantial evidence would be when we put him in the back of the van, he was alive or appeared to be. And when he got to where he was going, he wasn't moving. So the circumstances suggest that something went wrong. What they needed, rather than circumstantial evidence, was direct evidence. And that's what, from my sense of hearing what Mosby said today, that's what she feels that she was blocked in getting.
I see.
And so that she would be able to put together the strongest case possible.
Okay. Jason, thank you so much. Let's take a turn now. I want to talk a little bit more about tonight. President Obama going to really push, you know, his Secretary of State and his one-time political opponent. But do you think, Drew, that the president will talk about the racial divide in America more specifically and not just as a mention? And if, and does he need to?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if he is beyond a mention. And I'm not sure at this very moment how I'm feeling that he needs to, that he has to. I think he needs to address it, but I find it very peculiar in this time that we have an African-American president that has to talk about this. Like, he had to have a town hall on race. He has always had to talk about race, and we are now putting the responsibility as a country to solve race issues from the person who is oppressed versus the oppressor having to answer to it. So I would rather those who are the oppressor or who have been in, that's a part of the white privilege, if you will, so I'll say it the nicer way. The white privilege aspect of it is that they are the ones who actually need to address and talk about how do we bring upon change, healing systemically, right? Because systemically, we are Americans. We are Americans to the point that First Lady Michelle Obama said, we built this country on our backs. This country is as prosperous as it is because of our ancestors who were stolen from the continent, right? So at that point, everything systemically that is corrupted against us needs to be changed and needs to be addressed, not just as black issues, but because it is the issue. That is the issue.
Let me go back to Philadelphia. Taylor Thomas, you have a guest.
I do. I have Dr. Julianne Malvo, author of Are We Better Off? Race, Obama, and Public Policy. She's an economist, and you have ties to, you're actually the former president of Bennett College. Thank you for joining us today. A lot going on here, and today we're delving into the Black Lives Matter and how the Clinton administration may help to really resolve or come to some positive ending for African Americans as it pertains to this.
Well, I'm excited that the Black Lives Matter movement has really pushed not only candidate Clinton, but presidential nominee Clinton, as well as candidate Sanders, basically pushed them to have a kind of conversation that we haven't seen in a very long time. However, you know, I'm kind of sick of the conversation. This is my 11th Democratic convention. We talked to ask Reverend Jackson to talk about this in 84. We asked him to talk about it in 88. Bill Clinton wanted to have this national conversation on race, and we keep on talking. But guess what? I'm an economist. What we have to do is close the wealth gap, lower the unemployment rate, pay women a living wage, pay people a living wage, have ex-offenders have better access to jobs. When you do some of those things, then you really do deal with some of these race issues. So I'm hoping that while we know that Reverend Jackson talked about what Hillary will say, I want to talk about what Hillary will do. And quite frankly, President Obama still has 6 months, and he can use the executive order to do some things in our country. So I am, like I said, I'm sick of the race conversation. This is a conversation that we're having since John Adams said that if we don't deal with the slavery issue, and I believe he said this in 1800, that we would be left for the descendants to deal with.
Well, let me ask Dr. Malveau, what do you expect and what do you hope President Obama will say tonight?
You know, I have no hopes or expectations. He's a president. He's a politician. People always talk about it's the most important speech of his presidency. Nonsense. The most important speech that President Obama gave is in 2004 when he catapulted to national attention and when he really did position himself as a president who, as he says, no black America, no white America, just one America, no blue states, no red states. So I'm just looking to see what kind of soaring rhetoric. He's a master rhetorician. To see what kind of soaring rhetoric he's going to bring to this issue tonight and how he takes that and turns it into enthusiasm for Hillary. His job, remember, is to cause people to be enthusiastic about Hillary. Unfortunately, I mean, Hillary is our nominee. Let's go for it. Let's fight for her. But I talk to young people. I don't know how many hotels I've been into today, 3 or 4, and desk people. Not excited about Hillary. Happy that people are here in Philly because they're spending money and that means more money for them. But these folks are not jumping up and down. And so we need people to jump up and down because there's so many young people who've already declared that they're going to stay home.
But if you're talking about jumping up and down, let's talk about tonight. We have the vice presidential nominee. He's going to speak. Also, the vice president, Joe Biden. He's also going to speak. Okay, Lisa, are folks going to be jumping up and down or is that a bathroom break?
I don't know whether I would call it a bathroom break. I think that all of them are going to have a really difficult time outdoing the First Lady.
Absolutely.
And even even the president noted that she's a hard act to follow. And
I
think that much of what she said, out of all of the things that she said, the point about waking up in the morning in a house that slaves built, and the idea that that fact was then taken as opinion by many people... as if it wasn't true.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we are. We're in this bizarre world where you throw facts at people and they turn it around and say, well, that's your opinion.
Exactly.
That's how you feel, rather than, no, slaves actually built the White House and she's talking absolute fact. And then you get Bill O'Reilly, not to call folks out of name, who then said, well, the slaves were well-fed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, you know,
and you said that's a problem about race. I could say that's a problem about education. I learned about
that
in junior high school.
Right. Well, let me tell you, the myth of the happy slave has been a long-held myth.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's a book called Time on the Cross. It was written in 1976 when I was in graduate school and dating myself some there. And that book actually used a kind of science called cleometria, which is like econometrics, so using the numbers of history. And they've used that to show that enslaved people actually ate more calories than free white people. Like, I care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care how many calories you eat. If you're shackled, you're shackled.
Hey, Harold, another thing I think that the reason why Donald is getting some of the attention that he gets, you guys just mentioned here, is it going to be a snoozer with Tim Kaine and Vice President Joe Biden? We as voters, whether you're Democrat or Republican, need to stop and slow down and stop being 147 characters as far as giving you a definition of what life will be like.
Exactly.
You have to realize you need to listen to the details and not listening to the first line of something.
Well, that's absolutely, you know, Donald Trump has dumbed our country down, but we were already ready for it. And so, you know, it's not like he created brain surgery. He just basically reduced everything to, as you said, the 140 characters, and people have gone along with it. What we have to, you know, enslavement was real. People don't want to talk about it. Michelle was not offering her opinion. She was offering fact. I hope that people will be listening, looking up for her in October when the Birth of a Nation, Nat Turner story comes out. Now, that's when you're going to hear white folks spinning. That's when they're going to start spinning. They're going to say, no, well, really, you know. Now, Nat Turner and his rebellion eliminated about 100 people, you know. And people are going to say, well, maybe it wasn't that many. Guess what? All slaves were not happy slaves.
I want to talk a little bit before we end the conversation. I've got to talk about Bill Clinton's speech last night. And, you know, certainly there's a lot of debate about how good it was, how long it was. But the thing that came to my mind when I was sitting there watching this as it relates to Hillary Clinton was, why don't I know this? Why don't I know all of the things that your husband was singing? And because when Barack Obama was running as a senator, we knew everything, including his shoe size.
Well, you know what? Women get treated differently when they talk about themselves and they, quote, brag on themselves. When a man does it as confidence, when a woman does it as arrogance, we see this in boardrooms, we see it in classrooms, and we see it in presidential politics. I think that I love the story. I love the way I met a girl.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was just so really cute.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard her tell the story about how they met, but I could just see her taking the bull by the horns. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? She's like, dude, I am not waiting for you. If you keep checking me out, we're going to have a conversation.
And did you say taking the bull by the horns or the bill by the horns?
Well,
Taylor, okay, let's talk real quick about tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow?
Tomorrow, the lady herself, Hillary Rodham Clinton and Chelsea Clinton will take to the stage. Now, the gavel will go down at 4:30. It'll happen at 4:30. Now, Hillary Rodham Clinton will speak about her vision for the country. Of course, all eyes will be on her to hear what she has to say. And if she does actually say out of her mouth, Black Lives Matter or the movement, Mothers of the Movement, if that will be a part of her address to the American public.
Well, there you go. And it could be argued that tomorrow could very well be the biggest speech of her political career.
Now that, exactly. Now that Harold Fisher is nothing but the truth.
Golly, gosh. Great conversation tonight. Certainly looking forward to your coverage, Taylor, tomorrow. And we all are looking forward to hearing from Hillary Clinton and exactly what she is going to say. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I want to thank our guests, political commentator Drew Elands, and of course, law professor and associate dean of academic affairs at Howard University, Lisa Crooms. I also want to thank all of our guests who were gracious enough to join us in Philadelphia at our table at the DMC. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, July 27th. I am Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.